Blog Talk Radio.
I have to say, before anything else, I met this woman's doppelganger last Wednesday evening. There was a woman at a meetup that I go to who had this thick London accent like she does. And I said, would you please say Blog Talk Radio for me? And she goes, Blog Talk Radio. And I said, oh, my God, it's you. Okay. So I got to start this day out with a laugh. I really do because there is nothing to laugh at today. Okay, there's literally nothing I'm going to laugh at. There is nothing you can do to make me smile. Okay, that's as far as it goes for me today because of the way things have shaken out over the last few days. So first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to say that I'm introducing myself as Jeffrey Swartz. I'm a professor of law at WMU Cooley Law School. My compatriot, Brendan Berry, is here. He is also a professor of law at WMU Cooley Law School. And I have to say that the things that Brendan and I will espouse today, and some of which may be actionable, at least on my part, are not necessarily the opinions of the administration of WMU Cooley Law School, its faculty individually or at large, and thus I get to say good morning to Hezzy, and I get to say good morning, Brendan.
Good morning Jeffrey.
Paul.
How are you? Hi, Hezzy.
How am I? How am I? That's a tough one this morning.
Yeah, it is.
We normally start out this show with what do I really think, but gee willikers, I think people listening to the show are going to know what I'm going to talk about. The first thing I'm going to do is I want to justify my ability to render the opinion I'm about to render, so that I can settle up all the questions that could be asked about who do I think I am saying the things that I'm saying. I have been a lawyer now for, 1976, 47 years.
Wow.
And I have been a lawyer in Florida for almost 43. Come December, it'll be 43 years. I am a graduate of a good law school. I was a prosecutor, a very good one. I was a defense attorney. I was even better at that. I was a judge. That's the key point. I was a judge in a county. I was a state court judge in a county that is contained within the Southern District of Florida. So what I am going to espouse today and what I'm going to say is born out of my knowledge of the federal district court of which I practiced in and of which I was a colleague with those judges who were in the federal court. Most of them were state court judges first. I know them. I know almost every single one of them. I either appeared in front of them or I practiced with them or I was a colleague of theirs when they were in the state court. I know these people. Except for two, one of them will be the subject of our discussion today. After that, I started to do litigation, and I realized that I really, really disliked young judges. And the reason why I will make clear, because this particular judge falls right in there with it in spades. And then I just got tired of young lawyers who practice law the way that Donald Trump's lawyers practice law. Throw something at the wall and hope something sticks. And so I decided to become a professor instead. I decided to teach. I have done almost everything within the legal profession that you can do. I was a judge in every single division of the court that I was a judge in, of which I was on the bench, every different area, save probate. Because like the people who are litigants there, I wasn't dying to get to probate court. But I will say this, that I think I understand the mind of a judge. I think I understand where state court judges, who people accuse of playing politics at times, do just that. It's wrong. It will always be wrong. It is something that should not happen. Judges don't have constituents. They don't have a constituency. Their constituency is the law. They don't represent anyone. They represent the law. And for the very first time in my life, and in the time that I have practiced law, I am ashamed of a federal district court judge. I'm literally apoplectic over this. I have never in my life, and hope never again to see it, but I will be seeing it over and over again with this judge, who is bound and determined to hold on to jurisdiction over this matter, to help her patron, to help the person who got her where she is. That's what she's doing. And if anybody thinks that what she did this weekend was not political payback, was not an aberration of the law, listen to the people who know other than me. There is not one true expert on the law or the courts who thinks there's anything in this order that is correct. And I include in that my belief that there is not one other judge in the Southern District of Florida who in any way, shape, or form approves of what this judge did, and there are true philosophical reasons why. I will start with the simple thought that the former president of the United States is not, repeat, not entitled to greater consideration than any other defendant would get. And what this judge has done is set up precedent for every single defendant to come in and say, I want a special master to look at the evidence in this case. I don't trust the FBI. I don't trust the Department of Justice. I don't even trust you, Judge. She has brought upon the federal district courts all around this country, but in particular in the Southern District of Florida, the ability to be beset upon by saying simple words like, wait a minute, Trump got this, why don't I? And she doesn't care. A judge with as little experience, and when I say, yeah, she's been a judge, she's been a lawyer for 18 years, she's never tried a case in her life. She's never seen the inside of a courtroom in her life until she became a judge. Her only qualification to become a judge was she belonged to the Federalist Society. And she sits there and makes decisions without using the expertise, knowledge, and experience of 25 judges, including senior judges, who could sit down and explain to her why you can't do this. You cannot. 3 weeks after the DOJ has already reviewed all the documents, appoint a special master not only to determine whether there's privilege issues, but now she's authorized this person to determine whether there's executive privilege, trying to tie the hands of any judge who has to hear an indictment that's issued against Donald Trump. She has played delay games. I have read this opinion. She is factually wrong on almost everything. Just completely wrong. The law she applies is absolutely wrong. She danced around things to justify a political decision. to help Donald Trump, to pay him back for making her a federal judge, in hopes, in her hopes, that there, he'll get reelected and make her a United States Supreme Court justice. There is so much wrong with this opinion, you can't find anything right about it other than her signature is probably authentic. It is an unbelievable twisting of what normally occurs in what is standard practice. And she structured it in such a way that it may be 2 years before we can actually get an indictment of Donald Trump, who hopes he will be president by then. He tells the government that they're supposed to sit down with Donald Trump's lawyers and come to an agreement on who the special master should be, and who doubts that they're going to walk in the door, I'm talking about Trump's lawyers, with five lawyers who are all members of the Federalist Society, from the Southern District of Florida, that she is going to pick from, her friends, her political buddies, people who helped her get to the bench, versus the DOJ, who will come in with five names of people who are highly qualified to do this, either former federal district court judges or a former U.S. attorney by the name of Kendall Coffey, who has done this before, that she will reject. And she'll pick one of her Federalist Society buddies who will decide it's all executive privilege, which forces the government to litigate to be able to get the evidence. She has done something a federal judge has never, ever done before. In anticipation of an indictment, she has ordered the government that they cannot proceed with their investigation, which may mean they cannot proceed with a grand jury investigation, which means she has stayed their ability to indict Donald Trump. That has never happened, and there is no precedent for that anywhere, in any law. She is an embarrassment to the bench. She is an embarrassment to herself. And she has no business being on the district court bench. There's a reason why Chief Judge Cecilia Altanaga sent her to Fort Pierce. She was supposed to use this as a way to learn how to be a federal judge. And what did Donald do? He says, wait a minute, I appointed that judge up in Fort Pierce. File this in Fort Pierce. It doesn't matter that the federal courthouse in Palm Beach is 10 minutes away from Mar-a-Lago. Do it up in Fort Pierce. If we get lucky, we get her. She owes me. And she'll pay me back. And you know what? She did. She paid him back. Now, I don't know whether they'll do it or not, but the government should file today for an emergency stay of this order. And I think the 11th Circuit will grant it. And then if I'm Merrick Garland, I'm in front of a grand jury the next day. And I'm indicting Donald Trump. You think you're going to play with me? I'm going to play back with you. I had enough. I was trying to give you some leeway. But you know what? You give this guy an inch, he takes a mile. So I'm taking my mile back. And now the case leaves Judge Cannon, because now it'll go to a different judge because it goes in a different draw, and this case becomes moot, and now a federal district judge who's handling the criminal case will make decisions, who knows how to handle a criminal case. Let's take a look at Judge Cannon's order. There are four factors that she's supposed to consider in determining whether she should give equitable relief. She's talking about equitable relief. She at least found that as of this date and on the record that is exist, there has not been a compelling showing of callous disregard for Trump's constitutional rights. Really? They went and got a search warrant. How can they callously disregard his constitutional rights exercising a search warrant for which they called in advance and said, we're coming, and they were escorted around the place and shown where everything was? Not only did they not, there has not been a compelling showing, there'll be no showing of that. Except for Donald Trump says that the FBI, and he said this this weekend, the FBI and the Department of Justice are monsters. Monsters. The people that protect us are monsters. What does he think? It's Game of Thrones and we have the dragons and the other side doesn't? The second factor, whether Trump has an individual interest and need for the seized property, she finds ways in his favor of granting the request. Some of the materials that were seized were medical records, correspondence related to taxes, and accounting information, for which she has not asked the government whether, in fact, those are considered privileged documents that some of which might be returned and some of which are not subject to being returned to him. The government also acknowledged that some were personal effects without evidentiary value. That's great. Then they'll be returned. This review has already been done. They can account to the court for what they've kept and what they're planning on returning, and they can argue over the few items that are left as to whether they should be returned or not. But as to documents that belong to the federal government, he has no interest. They belong to the National Archives. You cannot return those documents to them. That's it's really, really, I mean, just out of line. Just out of line. The third factor, which is risk of irreparable injury. What's his irreparable injury? He can suffer reputational injury. Donald Trump can't have a worse reputation. I don't know anybody who can. I think the devil has a better reputation than he does. I'd rather sit down and have lunch with the devil, with Lucifer, than I would to sit down with Donald Trump. The fourth factor, whether Trump had persuasively argued there's no alternative adequate remedy at law, she says there isn't. There is. It's called, if he gets indicted, he can litigate these factors in front of a federal judge who's handling the criminal case, not you, you moron. That's an utter and complete falsity. She manipulated the Ritchie factors. This is beyond comprehension. Democracy dies when people don't care about the law, when the judges who are putting out the law, who are supposed to enforce the law, don't enforce the law, but make shit up as they go along. I'm sorry. If I did something like this, I'd be in front of the JQC in Florida in a heartbeat. I know a district court judge down in Miami who did stuff like this when he was a retired judge, and he was asked not to work anymore. I'm sorry. I cannot be more angry about anything, and I'm not alone. People who know better. People who know how this person got to the bench in the first place. People who know she is incompetent to be sitting on a federal district court bench seat. Know better. It doesn't take brilliance to figure this out. In case you couldn't tell, I'm a very angry man this morning. I'm incredibly angry over this. And it's not because it's Donald Trump. It's because this is not enforcement of the law. This is special treatment far beyond anything anybody else could assume. And don't tell me that these are special circumstances. A criminal is a criminal. And we have a criminal justice system that deals with it. He is always asked for more than anybody else gets. And in this case, he should not have gotten it. And now everybody who thinks that they've got every member of the, if I'm a member of the Federalist Society and I've got a case, you know where I'm going to file it? I'm going to drive up to Fort Pierce. Why should I in front of judges who I know won't give me the relief I want? I'll take it up to her. And that brings me back to what I don't like about young judges. She's so busy paying back getting her job than to do her job. How many Trump judges said no to him after the election? 10? 20? No evidence? No, 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 and no? If you want to practice criminal defense law, Judge Cannon, resign from the bench and become Donald Trump's lawyer. You don't know what you're doing. You don't know the first thing about criminal law, but that's what you should do. You don't defend people from the bench. That's not your job. Start doing your job. And stop being a politician. You got to stop me here, Brendan, and do something else.
No. I'm listening.
You're on the road.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I know you believe in the Constitution as much as I do, and I know you did defense work, but I've sat where she is, and I know right from wrong. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But this is wrong. This is just wrong. I've read this order. I can't find anything right about it. Who cares about his reputation? He has a reputation as a mob boss. I didn't know you could ruin the reputation of a mob boss. Did you?
Mm-mm. No. That's. I think one of the more important points you just made was that after the election, Donald Trump and his lawyers were in front of a lot of Trump appointees to the federal bench. And this is the first time that we've seen an outcome like this. You almost started to feel a sort of comfort level that, you know, as they say, the system held, at least as to the federal judiciary. What this judge has done is so dangerous because it undermines that confidence in the federal judiciary that it held. It looks like now it's not holding. And this Trumpism, which we're finally beginning to talk about in the terms that it should be talked about, fascism. You know, this is fascism, and Trump is the beneficiary of the rise of fascism in the United States. I'm to talk more about that in a minute. But fascism has tentacles, you know, and they reach into institutions. They infect institutions from within. And it has been beyond vital in modern times that federal courts not be infected. And that brings me to a larger point that I wanted to discuss. There's so much that we need to look at. Joe Biden gave a speech this past week in which he assailed what he called MAGA Republicans. And before that, he had said what's going on in Republican circles, I believe he used the term semi-fascist. So good, it's on the table. It's time to call the question. People who are fascist and authoritarians have to stop pretending they're not. Just let's put all our cards on the table. We got an election coming up, and Americans need to know here's what's on the ballot. Okay? What's on the ballot is a choice between Republican and Democrat, which means between fascism and the fall of American democracy, because if you give these people the reins, they're going to keep the reins. Okay? And it's not going to always turn out like it did in 2020. We're not always going to have decent humans in important places like Secretary of State of Georgia or Arizona. It doesn't have to turn out the way it turned out. We may not always have people like Mike Pence, who will at least at long last, after 4 years of defending and enabling Donald Trump, refuse to go along with the collapse of American democracy and the United States government. Doesn't have to end the same way. If you put Republicans in charge of local offices at the state level, of Congress, either House of Congress or the White House, you're asking for it. We've seen where it leads. On the other side, you have the Democratic Party, which no matter what you think, that they're too woke or that they're to blame for inflation or that a gallon of milk costs too much, no matter what you think about Democrats, they are not a threat to the continuing existence of the American experiment. They may have policies that you disagree with, but to the extent that they're demonized by Republicans as what? Baby killers, pedophiles, groomers, all this nonsense. You can call them names all you want. They do not want to end the American experiment. And fascists have gotten their feelings hurt, because they like marching around with swastikas and Confederate flags and obscenities about Democrats, right, written on their T-shirts. They like doing that. They like marching on the Capitol and storming the Capitol and trying to take over the Capitol and disrupt an election. They like doing that. They don't want to be called what they are. How dare you call me a fascist? All I want is to ignore elections, target the other, spread fear-based and grievance-based propaganda, worship a messianic strongman figure who can do no wrong, right? Demand loyalty, attack all who are disloyal, like the Department of Justice and the FBI, target the media. I just want to do those things, but I'm not a fascist. Those things define fascism. I don't see what Democrats have to lose anymore by, as I say, call the question. Americans.
Well,
that's why his speech was so good. You, in November, okay, you have no more excuse not to know what you're voting for. No more. You know what you're choosing, and make your choice. And look, if you choose fascism, then so be it. That's what you'll get.
And
we're going to answer the question. Yeah, there's no going back. You know, fascists use elections. I mean, that's, I think that's one thing that, you know, of course there's the idea of the putsch, right? But the most effective route for fascism is democracy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why this is so dangerous, right? Because they get in through a democratic election and then it's over.
All you
fascists
have to do
don't
is
give up power.
All you have to do is look at Mein Kampf.
Mm-hmm.
When Hitler made it abundantly clear that he had learned, you do not defeat a democratic republic through violence. You defeat it through the ballot box. You defeat it from within. That's where you win if you want to be a fascist state. And the Koch brothers learned that 25 years ago. And then you corrupt the judiciary to enforce your edicts.
Mm-hmm.
There is no choice this fall. And the funny and the great part about it is that the American public is waking up to that. Yes, the suburban people normally will vote their pocketbooks and they'll vote crime. If they're afraid of crime and their pocketbooks are getting hurt, they will throw out Democrats and they will vote Republican. But they're starting to realize after the Dobbs decision, after the insurrection, after what's happened just this past weekend, they're learning what's at stake. And their concern for the future of democracy is starting to surface. And Republicans are just apoplectic now. They got what they wanted with Dobbs. And it hurt them. Trump's back. The two things Republicans don't want to talk about is abortion and Donald Trump. And what is everybody talking about? Abortion and Donald Trump. And they realize that their golden opportunity to take back control of Congress in both houses has slipped away. Because they're led by a would-be dictator and a moronic minority leader whose nose is so brown, you know exactly where it's been. Even McConnell knows it. And all the criticism in the world from Rick Scott ain't going to change it because Rick Scott, well, I don't even want to tell you what I think of Rick Scott. I think I already have. Voldemort, because that's who he looks like. Some people think he looks like Max Headroom. He does in a way. For those people who remember Max Headroom. If you don't remember it, look him up. Okay? You'll enjoy it. I just, you know, I'm loving it, but I'm hating it. I'm just glad that right now the odds are that Democrats not only will hold on to control of the Senate, but they may expand it to the point where they can ignore Manchin and they can ignore Sinema and still get their way. The House, that's problematic because of the way it's structured. It would take a blue tsunami to hold on to the House, which could happen. It could happen. The great part is no matter what happens, nothing Republicans want to get through will get through because they will never be able to override a veto. And the one thing we know that's happening right now is that neither Joe Biden or Donald Trump are on the ballot this fall. But they both are sure acting like they are. And Donald Trump is throwing out threats and anger and grievance. And Joe Biden is saying, our country is better than this. It has to be better than this. So the choice is simple. I agree with you.
Mm-hmm.
You want to throw away the Constitution? You have the ability to do it, American people. You have the ability to do it in November. But if you create a blue wave, if Democrats make substantial gains in governorships, if they make gains in state houses, if they make gains in the Senate, I understand the House may be gone, although I think there's a possibility it won't be, but it's going to be very close. And Biden's approval ratings break 44, 45, where they are now, and hit 50 by November, Donald Trump would be a fool to run for president. Because that's a signal that he's going to, that he put his ass out there. He said, it's all about me. And the United States, the people of the United States said, you're right, it is all about you. Go away. Now it's time to plea bargain. But the choice is simple. It's the fascist party versus the Democrats. I don't even want to call them Republicans anymore. By the way, did anybody hear what Marco Rubio, little Marco, I'm going to call him by the name Donald gave him, little Marco with the tiny hands, okay? Little Marco, who's never had a job that did not entail a government check in his entire life. Did you hear what he said? Do you remember how he reacted to Hillary Clinton's emails? This is a guy who's the ranking member of the Intelligence Committee
mm-hmm.
in the Senate. And he went after Hillary and said she should be indicted and she should be charged. She mishandled just her mishandling of this information. Is a criminal offense, and she should be charged. And in those days, it was only a misdemeanor, but she should be charged. He was the leader of the pack. This weekend, he said, Donald Trump didn't violate any laws. This is a storage issue. Those are his words, a storage issue. He improperly stored it. Excuse me. You entitled little twerp. He wasn't entitled to have those documents in the first place. He shouldn't have been storing them in the first place. They belonged to the federal government. There were top secret, above top secret documents that had no business being outside of the White House. And if it was Hillary Clinton, you'd be screaming for the death penalty. Because you're losing to Val Demings, you have to attach yourself to Donald Trump. Go back to South Florida and try to find a real job. You won't find one, but you can try. There's a reason why you didn't play basketball, little Marco. Your turn again.
I want to point out, well, first of all, I'm Mr. Recurring Theme, right? I apparently have nothing new to say, but I'm going to come back to this.
It's okay.
Here's the next recurring theme, because I don't know how else to come at this. The two logical fallacies employed most by, and I agree with you, I don't know if we call them Republicans. We certainly cannot call these people conservative. There is nothing conservative about the agenda of this MAGA movement. The two logical fallacies they employ the most are whataboutism and false equivalence. And here we go again. It's like, as surely as the clock keeps running, you can count on this happening. Every time there's some kind of scandalous ongoing, right, on the political, the radical, right. The first thing they'll do is what about, okay? Because they don't want to talk about whatever outrageous scandal, right, is unfolding in front of us. God forbid we talk about that. Let's talk about something else. So what about, and what it's always Benghazi or Hillary's emails. That's the big one. And so you knew that was coming, right? What about Hillary's emails? Well, let me tell you something. What about Hillary's emails? But what was there was an allegation that she was reckless or careless with what server she was using, and that some of the material on that server had a small C next to a paragraph, which she should have known. Right, means that there's classified information in that paragraph. Okay, and this leads to the second fallacy, false equivalence. So first of all, you've got us talking about the wrong person and the wrong episode. And second of all, you're equating the two when there is nothing at all to equate. There is no evidence at all after years of being investigated that Hillary Clinton intended to have classified information where it shouldn't be. Did some classified information wind up where it shouldn't be? Maybe. I've never even really heard conclusive evidence of that. But there is no evidence at all. None. A picture is worth 1,000 words, right? That picture of top secret documents on that Donald Trump had in his office and in his storage space, including in a desk drawer. How do you miss that? Bright red, bright yellow, top secret, right? Written across the top and bold. And SEI, by the way, are most secret. Human resources and signals intelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just maddening because you can count on the media to go along with it, right? That there are two sides to this. Here's another recurring theme. There aren't two sides to every argument.
There's only the truth.
Yes. Let me, while we're on that, let me tell you something else that's bothering me this morning.
You got time, and I've used enough of mine, so go ahead.
All right. I want you to weigh in on what you think about this. The new head of CNN, I can't remember this clown's name, is bound and determined to make CNN, quote-unquote, balanced. And so he's getting rid of people like...
Where did we hear that before, by the way? Where did we hear
exactly.
Fair and balanced before?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that rings a bell,
okay.
Right?
Yeah.
So who does he get rid of? He gets rid of people like John Harwood. Did you hear about this? He just got rid of John Harwood.
Yeah.
One of the best reporters
at
CNN.
John did step over the line, though. I mean, he really did. But it wasn't worth firing. Licht
I don't even
did
know what
not
he did.
Had, Licht, Chris Licht did not, and by the way, the guy's name is Chris Licht, did not have to fire John Harwood.
What did he do? What did Harwood do? I don't know. I'm not aware of what
he basically... made conclusory statements which were derogatory towards the other side in reporting the news. Let's just leave it at that one.
So you're telling the truth?
Well, he was characterizing the truth as opposed to just speaking the truth. Okay? Mm-hmm. And he did step over the line. I have to say that that was probably something that should have been said on a podcast by somebody like me. But to the same extent, it wasn't a firing offense, in my opinion, after all the years that Harwood has been at CNN. So, no, Licht should not have fired Harwood. There are worse things.
And he shouldn't be. Yeah, and he shouldn't be trying to achieve "quote unquote" balance. You really have to start wondering what that means, right? Does there have to be a MAGA now on every CNN panel in order to achieve balance? Because right, the MAGAs are what 40% of the country. So is that what are these news people doing? I don't want to hear from MAGA because they lie all the time. That's all they do is lie. Do we really have to give them airtime to achieve balance? There's a new, I just read this a few minutes just before we started here. Washington Post, new reporting. There's a new owner of Politico. So we got, Fox and the Wall Street Journal, right, and all that run by the Murdochs. Politico, which is, a pretty major outlet here in the United States, obviously. There's a new owner of Politico. It's a German. And he says that he wants Politico to be nonpartisan. Right, so we got the CNN is doing this dance now, and Politico is doing this, right? We can't just seek the truth. We gotta be nonpartisan, because if Democrats say that climate change exists, then we have to have somebody on to say it doesn't. Even though we have the doomsday glacier down in Antarctica ready to break off and rise sea levels feet. Is that made up or is that fact?
Yeah, I understand what you're saying.
Now, let me finish on this German guy. Because, he wants to be a nonpartisan. You want to hear the email he sent to colleagues in 2020?
Sure.
He wants to be a nonpartisan, right? I pray that Donald Trump will again become president of the United States of America.
Wow.
Mr. Nonpartisan, German new owner of Politico.
There are
which, by the way, is
people.
Another.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other institution that gives way to fascism, the media. So go ahead.
Yeah. I mean, Brian Stelter, when he took sides in the battle over who was to become the head of CNN or the purchase of CNN, he went over the line, and he was basically inviting the new owners basically to fire him. And I think wanted to be out there almost like he was a martyr for the cause. What happened with Harwood it started a long time ago. Earlier this year, Harwood characterized Trump as mentally unwell.
That is manifestly true.
No, that's
manifestly true.
I don't question that may be true. But let me just say this. John Harwood is not the guy to say it. Because unless he has experts who will back him up on this, or it was relevant to what he was reporting on, then he should not have said it. I have to say that. He wasn't actually fired. He was pushed out. But, apples, oranges.
Yeah.
Potato, potato. Okay. Part of Stelter's departure from CNN, he reported that the Daily Beast had reported that Licht wanted to blow up CNN's New Day morning show. And immediately after that report came out, Brianna Keeler, who does the show with John Berman, criticized Biden's speech recently, for having military personnel in the background, two Marines standing there next to the flag. And this is what she said. Whatever you think of this speech, the military is supposed to be apolitical. Oh, really? And how critical were you of Trump, who used the military to clear out Lafayette Park so he could stand in front of a damaged church holding up a Bible upside down. Okay. He says it's wrong when Democrats do it. It's wrong when Republicans do it. That's what she said. And Jeff Zeleny, who has been critical of Trump, echoed her sentiment. This is the new motion that CNN is making towards becoming what some have referred to as the baby Fox News.
Mm-hmm.
One person said, you know, CNN's transformation into baby Fox News is officially complete when Brianna Keeler goes after MAGA, one vote blue supporter said. So, yeah, Licht wants to change CNN. There's no question about it. And the idea that they have, and I'm probably it's true, that they want to have one MAGA person for every Democrat. And it starts with I can't remember his name now, and I will in a minute, former Republican congressman who thinks Donald Trump walks on water is a regular guest on panels, espousing MAGA Republican viewpoints. Unsupported by fact, but espousing them anyway. And constantly criticizing Biden. Biden's to blame for everything, according to him. So, you know, that's what he wants to do to CNN. And here's the bottom line. The only constituency that the press is supposed to have, the media is supposed to have, is the truth. Not a yay or a nay on anybody, but the truth. And if you don't tell the truth, you get criticized. If you tell the truth, then people will listen to what you have to say. That's just the way it works. So, kind of the way I see it, but then again, who am I, right?
Yeah, that's just dangerous, the direction we're heading here. That's as you can see, it drives me kind of up the wall. I mean, but we've only got a few minutes left. I want to see what you think. One of the interesting developments, there have been so many since last time we were on here, but is Bill Barr throwing Donald Trump under the bus.
Oh, yeah. There's tire tracks. There are tire right. tread tracks on Donald Trump when he did that.
Yep. What did you make of that? What's going on with that?
You know, there's a part of me that I think the easiest thing to say is that Barr is trying to get out from under the thought process that he is part of Donald Trump's attempts and desire to overthrow the United States government. It seems that overthrowing the government is a line that Barr won't cross. And I think that after leaving, the criticism he faced from Donald Trump told him, give it right back to him, because you know a lot more than people think you do. And he has a book out there, and he wants people to buy it. There's no question about that. But it's hard. I mean, even some panelists on other stations have taken the position that it's almost like agreeing with Bill Barr is something they had to do, and then they went home and took a Clorox shower because they had to get all the cooties off of them. You know, I think that's where everybody was. He spoke the truth. And when he does, you don't revel in it. You don't congratulate him because you expect a former attorney general to speak the truth. But you recognize it. And it's clear that he's not interested in Donald Trump anymore. You know, he's got kids who work at the Department of Justice. I don't think they've been fired yet. They might have been. I didn't hear anything about it, and I think if they had been, we'd have heard about it. But he's got two kids who work at the Department of Justice who probably take their job pretty seriously. By the way, the name of the congressman I was talking about earlier is Scott Jennings.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's from South Carolina, if I'm not incorrect, or North Carolina, I don't know which. But no, I think that it was a shock. I think it was a shock to a lot of people how blunt he was. You certainly could see it in the face of the people that were interviewing him.
Yeah.
Did you see
mm-hmm.
her look? We have a word. We have words for that in Yiddish. It's called verkumptepunim. Right, Hezzy? Verkumptepunim.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Sour face. Okay? A sour face. They expected him to say something different than what he said.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And she was. I mean, you had to see the look on her. You know how when people get angry, their mouth gets really small.
Yes.
The lips tighten up. And you ever see that? My father did that. Okay. Mouth gets really small. Okay. And she was so puckered up. I won't even say what you can mistake it for. She was so puckered up that she couldn't get any words out. She couldn't ask anything more. So the guy who has more makeup on than she does, okay, because they all got to look like George Hamilton with their perfect hands, okay, he starts asking questions and making statements that he expects that Barr will use to backtrack on what he said, and Barr goes right after him and makes all the arguments that should have been in this judge's order saying why she wouldn't give the guy a special master. It was must-see TV. You got to pull this up and watch it. It's only about 3 or 4 minutes long. You got to watch it. I mean, I'm deadly serious, okay? There's no way she could have any lines on her face because she pulled her mouth so tight, it pulled her skin tight on her face, okay, so that none of the lines on her face could show. I mean, it was thrilling.
On that note, gentlemen, I have a meeting. I'm absolutely must be at.
You keep going,
but I gotta sign off now. So,
not without you. Okay, Tanya's waiting for you. Go talk.
I'll see you next week, and I'll see you in a couple
Take
hours.
Take care.
Yeah.
Be well.
Okay. Yeah, you will. No. Okay, no. I gotta go get ready for class myself, Ezzy. Okay.
All right.
I'd love to keep going. I could go for another hour, but I really gotta do stuff. Okay, so.
Well, if you got to do stuff, then you go right ahead. Thank you so much.
Okay.
What a pleasure.
We'll see you next Tuesday or if something comes up before then. How's that sound?
We could do that as well, so not to worry.
Okay. All right.
All
take care of yourself, Ed.
Take care
right,
of yourself,
care.
Too. Bye.
All right.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You so much. Well, there we have it, folks. Jeff Swartz, who's just getting off the line now, professor at WMU Cooley Law School. Also a former judge, constitutional and criminal lawyer, and the gentleman that left before him, Brendan Beery, a constitutional lawyer, both professors at WMU Cooley Law School's Tampa, Florida campus. So really phenomenal, really, really phenomenal. Okay, let's move on to some other things on the international stage, which I think you'll find interesting. Bear with me a moment. 1 second to refresh my stuff. Well, 1 second. Bear with me a moment. I've got to. One second here. having difficulty pulling up my my info. Okay, let me just try this again. Bear with me a moment. And hopefully this will work. See what happens. No, it's not working for one reason or another. So bear with me. Okay, let's move on a little bit differently. Try to cover some other news, which I think you may find interesting. Bear with me a second here. Okay. Well, this is a Russia-Ukraine update. The IAEA is seeking protection zone around Zaporizhia's nuclear power plant. It seems that the International Atomic Energy Agency has called for an end to shelling near Ukraine's Zaporizhia nuclear plant. Meanwhile, Putin is overseeing joint drills with China and India. And these are the latest facts. They come actually from Deutsche Welle, German World, the publication. Well, the United Nations International Atomic Energy Agency has called for the establishment of a protection zone around Ukraine's Zaporizhia nuclear plant, power plant, ZNPP, in southern Ukraine, so long as Russia's invasion continues. In a report issued after visiting the nuclear plant, Europe's largest, the IAEA said that shelling presented a major risk to nuclear safety. Quote, while the ongoing shelling has not yet triggered a nuclear emergency, it continues to represent a constant threat to nuclear safety and security with potential impact on critical safety functions that may lead to radiological consequences with great safety significance, the IAEA had said in their report. It said that the best source of action would be for the conflict to end, but failing that, a security area should be established. Quote, shelling on site and in its vicinity should be stopped immediately to avoid any further damages to the plant and associated facilities for the safety of the operating staff and to maintain the physical integrity to support safe and secure operation. And this requires agreement by all relevant parties to the establishment of a nuclear safety and security protection zone around the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant. That's what it said. So it said it was ready to offer guidance on establishing such a zone. During the visit, the IAEA said it saw numerous cases of damage caused by damage, and at one point were forced to seek shelter from incoming shellfire. The damaged infrastructure included a turbine lubrication oil tank, the roofs of several buildings, including the one housing the spent fuel transporter vehicle, the building that houses fresh nuclear fuel, and the solid radioactive waste storage facility, the new training building, the building with the central alarm system for the physical protection system, and the container holding radiation monitoring system, which is near the dry spent fuel storage facility. It heaped praise on the staff manning the plant, but said that working and living conditions needed to improve for them to avoid the risk of a nuclear accident. The staff at all of Ukraine's nuclear facilities have continued to show endurance and resilience in keeping the sites running in a safe and secure way amid the conflict, said the IAEA, who saluted them as they wrote their report. It said they were, quote, under constant high stress and pressure, especially with the limited staff available, end quote. And continuing, they said this is not sustainable and could lead to increased human error with implications for nuclear safety. Kyiv and Moscow have repeatedly accused each other of shelling the plant. The Zaporizhia plant, along with most of the rest of the region, has been under Russian occupation since March, but is run by Ukrainian staff. Ukraine's nuclear agency, Energoatom, said on Monday that shelling disrupted power lines and took the plant's last remaining reactor offline. Well, the United Nations nuclear watchdog, citing information supplied by Kyiv, said that the plant's backup power line has been cut to extinguish a fire. It said that the line itself was not damaged and would be reconnected. Later on Tuesday, IAEA Chief Rafael Grossi will brief the United Nations Security Council. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky warned of a, quote, near radiation catastrophe, end quote, and alleged that Moscow, quote, does not care what the IAEA will say, end quote. Well, meanwhile, Kyiv has claimed gains in a counteroffensive in Ukraine's south, including the recapture of one village in the Kherson region, which lies immediately west of Zaporizhia. Here's a look at some of the other major news stories from Russia's war in Ukraine on September 6th. Well, the European Commission recommends a Russian visa deal be dropped. Well, the European Commission has recommended that the visa facilitation agreement with Russia be suspended. The move was largely expected and will now be passed on to the European Council for final approval. Quote, a country like Russia, waging a war of aggression, should not qualify for visa facilitations as long as it continues conducting its destructive foreign policy and military aggression towards Ukraine, demonstrating a complete disregard to the international rules-based order, end quote, the Commission said. Suspension is in response to increased risks and threats to the Union's security interests and the national security of the member states as a result of Russia's military aggression against Ukraine. Well, suspending the deal would mean a more arduous process for visas for Russian nationals, but would include considerations for family members of European Union citizens, journalists, dissidents, and civil society representatives. Now, the increased hurdles they face would include a higher visa fee, which goes to 80 euros up from 35, processing times up to 45 days, restrictions on multiple entry visas, and a requirement for more documents. The visa deal first came into force in 2007, but ministers from European Union member states last week agreed to scrap the deal. The new arrangement falls well short of an outright ban on visas for Russians, as some European Union states have called for. According to the Commission, about 963,000 Russians held valid visas to the Schengen area. So, a missile attack kills three in the Kharkiv region, the governor there says. The Kharkiv regional governor, Oleh Sinehubov, said that three civilians were killed in two Russian strikes on the regional capital and on the village north of it. Sinehubov said that a Russian rocket attack had destroyed a residential building, killing a 73-year-old woman. Two men were killed in shelling in the Kharkiv village of Zolochiv, which lies in between the regional capital and Ukraine's border with Russia, according to the governor. Sinehubov said that a new rocket attack on Tuesday morning had nearly destroyed an apartment building in central Kharkiv. The city's mayor, Ihor Terekhov, said that three people had been rescued from under the ruins of the building. Ukrainian general staff, more than 50,000 Russian losses have been incurred. Ukraine's general staff, in a Facebook post, estimated the Russian military's total losses since the start of the invasion in February at more than 50,000 soldiers. The Ukrainian army claims to have destroyed over 2,000 tanks and nearly 4,500 armored vehicles, and to have shot down 236 airplanes and 207 helicopters. The GPA news agency said it could not independently verify the data. Britain's defense ministry, given an estimate of 25,000 Russian losses, far short of the Ukrainian general staff's figures. Moscow has not provided any information on casualties for many months. Last Friday, pro-Russian separatists in the Donetsk region estimated their losses since late February at 2,900. And Putin watches from a Far East military. He watches the drills in the Far East military. Well, Russian President Vladimir Putin was seen smiling and joking with Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu as he inspected military drills in the country's Far East region. Troops from China, India, and a number of other countries are participating in the drills named Vostok 2022 after the Russian word for East. Russia's defense ministry said that the exercises involve over 50,000 troops, much less than the 300,000 that it said took part in 2018. Moscow says that the drill also involved military contingents and observers from Algeria, Laos, Mongolia, Nicaragua, and Syria. Also involved are Belarus, which Moscow has used as a staging ground for its invasion of Ukraine, and a number of other former Soviet countries in Central Asia and the Caucasus. The exercises are due to end on Wednesday, after which Putin will attend the Eastern Economic Forum in Vladivostok alongside Chinese top lawmaker Li Zhongshu. A little more on the conflict in Ukraine. Russian Statistics Bureau Rosstat said that the country's gross domestic product had fallen by just 0.4% in the first 6 months of 2022, and gas revenues continued to shore up the country's finances despite, one second, lost my page here, where am I? One second. Oh, one second here. I really lost my place here. I'll see in a moment. Okay, let me repeat this. So Russian President Vladimir Putin was seen smiling and joking with Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu as he inspected military drills in the country's Far East region. Troops from China, India, and a number of other countries are participating in the drills named Vostok 2022 after the Russian word for East. Russia's defense ministry said the exercises involve only 50,000 troops, much less than the 300,000 that it said took part in 2018. And Moscow says the drills also involve military contingents and observers from Algeria, Laos, Mongolia, Nicaragua, and Syria. Also involved are Belarus, which Moscow has used as a staging ground for its invasion of Ukraine, and a number of other former Soviet countries in Central Asia and the Caucasus. The exercises are due to end on Wednesday, after which Putin will attend the Eastern Economic Forum in Vladivostok alongside Chinese top lawmaker Li Zhongshu. While Russian Statistics Bureau Rosstat said that the country's gross domestic product had only fallen by just 4%, 0.4% in the first 6 months of 2022, as oil and gas revenue continued to shore up the country's finances despite Western sanctions. Former British Foreign Minister Liz Truss, who is set to take office as Prime Minister today, has conversation with a world leader as Prime Minister will be the Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, underscoring Britain's support for Kyiv. Germany is set to extend the lifespans of two nuclear plants as Berlin tries to find alternatives to Russian gas. So that's the story there. One second here. Let's go over to find out about Liz Truss. She's going to become the new United Kingdom's Prime Minister. Conservative Party leader Liz Truss is Britain's new Prime Minister after the United Kingdom's Prime Minister Boris Johnson tendered his resignation. The next government faces calls to tackle a growing energy crisis and a looming recession. Liz Truss is the United Kingdom's Prime Minister after traveling to meet Queen Elizabeth at her Scottish residences, known as Balmoral, for appointing a new cabinet. Outgoing Prime Minister Boris Johnson had already handed over his resignation to the United Kingdom's monarch. So what are Truss's plans for when she takes office? Well, the Truss government will be expected to deal with an energy crisis and soaring inflation driven by Russia's invasion of Ukraine, repercussions of the COVID-19 pandemic, and Brexit. United Kingdom's inflation has risen above 10% for the first time in four decades, and the Bank of England forecasts it will reach 13.3% in October. The bank said that Britain could enter recession by the end of the year. Household bills are due to jump 80% in October, triple the cost of a year ago. And during her leadership campaign, Truss promised help for people struggling to pay the bills, but did not give further details. In a speech on Monday, Truss promised to help Britain weather the economic crisis. Truss said she would continue British support to Ukraine and promised to increase British defense spending to just over 2 to 3% of gross domestic product. She has since said that her first phone call with a world leader will be with Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. Truss defended rival Rishi Sunak in a vote of Conservative Party members on Monday. Well, current Secretary of State for Business, Kwasi Kwarteng, is likely to be named Chancellor of the Exchequer, United Kingdom's Finance Minister under Truss. After the resignation of Home Secretary State, his name is actually Prit Pastel, on Monday, Attorney General Suella Braverman is expected to take on the Interior Affairs brief. Meanwhile, James Cleverly is touted to take over from Truss as Secretary of State for Foreign Affairs. If correct, those appointments would mean that for the first time in the United Kingdom's history, there would be no males in any of Britain's four great offices of state. Well, Johnson built a farewell. Ongoing Prime Minister Johnson product line, according to the fine address, we must end up where we left off, which is to look at the statistics again. Okay. Okay. Well, we'll leave it at that there. Bear with me a moment as I try to check on some other issues. One moment. All right. One second. I think here we are. Well, one second. The mayor of Lod speaks about the murder of a mother and a teen, and Israel would come to a stop had they been Jews, it seems. So standing to an F-35 fighter jet, Lapid issues a warning to Iran not to test us. So this is what's happening there. So Prime Minister Yair Lapid said on Tuesday it was too soon to know if Israel had succeeded in thwarting the emerging nuclear agreement between world powers and Iran, which it sees as harmful. Lapid, who was on a visit to the Nevatim Air Base in southern Israel, which houses the Israeli Air Force fleet advanced F-35 fighter jets, also issued a warning to Iran. Quote, "It's still too early to know if we have indeed succeeded in stopping the nuclear agreement, but Israel is prepared for every threat and every scenario," Lapid said in a brief statement in front of an F-35. "If Iran continues to test us, it will discover Israel's long arm and capabilities. We will continue to act on all fronts against terrorism and against those who seek to harm us," he said. "As U.S. President Joe Biden and I agree, Israel has full freedom to act as we see fit to prevent the possibility of Iran becoming a nuclear threat," Lapid had added. Israel has been pressuring the United States to re-enter the 2015 nuclear accord. A senior defense official said last month that Israel had two main issues with the emerging deal, so-called sunset clause, which would lift limitations on Iran's nuclear power plant, or rather nuclear program, when the accord expires, and expectations would remain to Iran to increase funding to proxies. So Biden took office aiming to revive the deal, which was abandoned in 2016 by its predecessor, Donald Trump, who unleashed a volley of fresh sanctions on the cleric and the cleric-run country. Well, the European Union has put forward on August 8th what it called a final text. Iran proposed changes to it, largely accepted by the Europeans, to which the United States issued a response through the mediators, saying it was, quote, not constructive, and on Monday, Iran explained that it had not yet revived an official curfew. Let's report from us. Just quickly look to see if anything else has come in. Bear with me a moment. All right, let me just check to see if we have anything else. I think not. So I think we've caught up. Only about 11:30. One moment. Okay. Okay, so going to the front page. We're always here. Okay, I'm going to wish you all a goodbye. Time to do the last half hour for medical reasons. And we'll speak to you tomorrow. I don't remember who the guest will be tomorrow. I have to recheck because I've been away in the hospital for about a week. And so I really don't remember who we have scheduled, and I have to recheck to see if they're still going to be able to make it. So have a great day. Enjoy the rest of the morning. Good afternoon. I hear it's going to rain, and tomorrow it's going to be like really like a major storm of rain. So just all the best. Take care and goodbye. Thanks for being with us today. Goodbye.